And we're back on Big Board Sports. High school football season. We're coming up on week three, and I have not checked in yet with my guy, Coach Grassdorf at Niskayuna. Long overdue for this. Brian, my friend.
You guys, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, how you been,
Coach,
buddy?
Thanks.
Everything good?
Good, good. Yeah, good start to the season. Guys are working hard, and it's an exciting time of year.
Well, and I will say this on a personal note. You weren't wrong about Ithaca, my friend. My son, Brady, loves Ithaca College, and I know that's where you went. So when you said he's going to do great there and have a great career there, you are spot on. That program is phenomenal, Brian.
Yeah, great choice. You know, hopefully he has tons of success there, and excited to see how he does.
You know what? They're good, too. They're good.
Yeah.
They're good. You know how many receivers they have, Brian? They brought in receivers? 19 receivers,
wow.
13 are freshmen.
Wow. And it's a good program. I'm a little biased on that, but.
Well, I mean, their win-loss record over the many, many years kind of speaks for itself there. They are, you know, one of the better Division III programs in the country. Brady absolutely loves it. So thanks for the thumbs up on Ithaca. All right, what have you seen, Brian, out of your team in 2 weeks? You open up with a win over York, and then the tough loss to Shen on Friday night, 28-21, and now you've got Cicero North Syracuse this week. What have you seen from your team after a couple of weeks?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of great things from our guys. First game, we came out and played a great complete game, and then this week against Shen. You know, we got faced with some adversity. You know, a lot of things you can't replicate in practice. You know, getting a 2-minute drill at the end. You know, playing from behind, playing in a tight game. You know, big crowd, and you know, it was a great experience for our guys, and you know, it's only going to pay off as we get back into league play here in a few weeks.
Yeah, and you're in the A's this year, right?
Yep.
So that makes it a little different for you moving forward with the rest of the season. How have you used Cam so far? Cam Grasso, obviously, have already committed to the University at Albany. How have you used him? Has he been at quarterback and also wide receiver, a little combo there?
Yeah. Any way we can get him the ball and get the ball in his hands, we try to do that. But, you know, playing receiver, playing a little wildcat and quarterback, and, you know, that he was big, and that got us going this on Friday night against Shen. We were stalling out a little bit on offense and went to him at wildcat and got two big plays before the end of the half and got us back in the game.
Yeah, it was a 70-yard run, I believe, on one of them for sure. Cam's an electric player for you. Who else do you use at quarterback when Cam is in wildcat or at wideout? Who's the quarterback?
This week, a sophomore, Thomas Bowler, started for us. We also have a senior, Ethan McGavro. You know, Thomas started this week. He's doing a good job. He does a good job, you know, managing the offense for us. Reminds me a lot of Ethan Gilton we've had in the past. Asked a ton of questions, always learning, and you know, he's going to be good. He's definitely good now, but he's got a bright future ahead of him too.
How do you look at the A's right now with your competition on your schedule?
Yeah, we've seen some of them play, and you know, A's are always tough too. A lot of good programs: Vernon Hills, Boston Spa. You know, Bethlehem's always good too. So, you know, if we play complete games, we can compete at that level for sure. And, you know, just looking forward to see how that goes for us.
Yeah, I think you're going to be just fine, Brian, in the A's. A lot of non-conference games, though, right? Is this a little different this year? I'm not sure, man. I don't remember this. Like, you already had one to open up the year, York, and now you come right back with another non-Section 2 team this Friday night.
Yeah, Yorktown, obviously, like the old Week Zero, get to pick who you want to play, and then Shen was the AA crossover, and then just the way the two divisions fall, you play either a cross division or this year a bunch of the A's are playing some out-of-section teams. So ours just happened to fall early, and, you know, we drew the biggest school in Syracuse and CNS, but, you know, we're looking forward to the challenge and, you know, keep getting us better each week.
Yeah, what kind of matchup? Is this team good coming in Friday night?
Yeah, they're good. They're, you know, very similar to Shen, big, strong, their athletic team. They lost to the CBA Syracuse in the sectional finals last year by 6. So, been a historically very good program, and you know it's going to be a tough battle for us, but it'll be good for us.
How are you? We're talking with Brian Grassdorf, head coach Niskayuna, off to a 1-1 start, and that game is at your place, right? You're at home Friday night, right?
Yeah, we're home Friday.
Friday 7:00 kick against Cicero North Syracuse. How are you defensively, Brian?
Yeah, defensively, we play physical. You know, we got team speed. Obviously, everyone knows Cam and our other skill guys on offense, Joey DiPiazza and Mari Forrest. But, you know, defensively, our guys fly around and play physical, tough football. So we like where the defense is at. And, you know, they've been challenged these couple weeks, and they've stepped up to the challenge.
Yeah, no doubt they have, no doubt. Brian, when you look at the red now, who do you have? Rattle off a couple of who do you have after this week? Because I'm assuming you get right back into the rest will be Section 2 teams.
Yeah, then we go Bethlehem at home, and then the rest of the Capital Division, Troy, LaSalle, Amsterdam, and Columbia.
Okay. All right. Well, of those teams and with where you're at right now, I think you're in pretty good shape. That Shen game was a heck of a game. I assume Shen is, you know, I know people were talking about how Shen might be not quite as good as a normal Shen team, but I was watching the game on TV, and we did have a camera there. They look like they're still big and strong and can run the football.
Yeah, they're big, strong. They can run the football. Clawson's a good quarterback, and you know they always got athletes in the secondary and receiver position. So, you know, I thought they played a great game, and you know our guys battled against them, and you know just came up short.
How was that atmosphere Friday? I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better weather night, and you're going to get another one this week too. This Friday looks as good as it was last Friday. I mean, the crowds in Section 2 have been phenomenal.
Yeah, it was a great crowd. Obviously, Shen draws well. Our first home game, we draw pretty well. You know, being the TV game too, and you know, it was a fun night. Can't beat Friday Night Lights, and you know, that was just even better one for sure.
All right, Coach. Well, listen, we'll get down to see you here sooner than later. Congrats on the start here, and good start for you, and good luck this Friday night. We'll see you soon.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Good luck to Brady and go Bombers.
Thank you. Yeah, there you go, buddy. You got that right. We are totally Bombers. Thanks, Brian. Brian Grassdorf.
All right, thanks.
Head coach at Niskayuna. He played at Ithaca, and so did Greg Sheeler, played at Ithaca. So when word got around that my son might be going to Ithaca, I got and Clawson, Brian Clawson, another, I think he's a Bomber too, Ithaca. So all three of those coaches, Sheeler, good Grassdorf, stuff. And yeah. Clawson. They all Ithaca guys, so it's really cool. It's hour number two on a Wednesday. Roger Weiland, Michael Johnson Jr., Steve Jones from Siena University across the glass. As we talk to Steve coming up here a little bit about the sneak preview tonight at MVP Arena for both the Siena and women's basketball teams. But first, our good friend Bob Nightingale, USA Today senior lead writer. When it comes to Major League Baseball, nobody does it better than Bob Nightingale, and he's been a regular guest of mine for many years on many platforms. I had you on my platform at the prior radio station I was at many, many times, Bob, and here you are still joining us on Big Board Sports. How are you, Bob? Good morning.
It's still always my pleasure. Thanks, Roger. Thanks,
yeah,
Michael.
Man. No, yeah, we've enjoyed your work all these years. Let's start with the Yankees. I don't know how this Yankee team goes anywhere in the postseason with the way their bullpen is right now. They are absolutely pathetic, Bob, in the bullpen. Watching last night, blowing a 10-1 lead against the Minnesota Twins. Who do you trust in the bullpen of the New York Yankees right now?
What's amazing is like the Dodgers, same thing. You know, the Dodgers have had four games already. The bullpen's given up at least 9 runs. Detroit's bullpen's fallen apart, and so it's a universal thing. The Yankees aren't the only ones in here. It's amazing how bad the bullpens are all these contenders.
Yeah, especially against a team like Minnesota. You think a 10-1 lead against the Twins? They're not very good. That would be safe, but it wasn't safe last night. That final score was 10-9.
Yeah, I mean, the Twins and Yankees has always been, you know, the Harlem Globetrotters versus the Washington Generals. They've owned those guys forever. And, that would have been really embarrassing to blow that thing. You know, they still have, about 10 days to get it right. You know, they're going to have to shift some starter, you know, into that bullpen to help solidify things and yeah, some of these guys, you know, like Devin Williams, they're playing for a big contract, too.
Yeah.
You keep struggling like this, you're not going to get that money in free agency that you thought.
Here's my guess, is if I'm going to take one of those guys and put him in the bullpen, it's the guy that I saw last night at the mound. Put Cam Schlittler in the bullpen. Let him come out of the bullpen. The guy throws gas. He might be better served in that spot. He's been running out of gas as a starter here recently. I think he'd be a prime candidate to move into the bullpen for the postseason.
Yeah, we may see that. Absolutely. I know the you know, the Dodgers, for instance, Ohtani mentioned after the game, like, I might have to play a little bit of outfield now just to help the team out in relief. You know, their starting rotation has been great. But, yeah, you're seeing a bunch of those things, too. You know, the Mets are doing it. The Philadelphia Phillies have to do it. So we're going to see that a lot, I think, by all these playoff teams here in the next 10 days.
We're talking with the great Bob Nightingale, senior MLB writer and columnist with the USA Today here, hour number two of Big Board Sports on 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio. Bob, flipping it over to the Mets, and boy, they're still fighting for their lives, right? And that cluster of the National League wild card. They've won two in a row, the big walk-off to snap the eight-game losing streak with Pete over the weekend. They get a good win over the Padres last night. Do you think right now, still looking at it, Bob, you're confident that the Mets are going to be able to find a way to get into the playoffs for the NL wild card?
I don't know if I'd say confident, maybe cautiously optimistic.
There.
Yeah. I mean, the Giants are done. I mean, the Reds are done. Diamondbacks, you know, they still have to play. They play the Giants today, have to face Verlander. Then they play three against the Phillies, three against the Padres, and three against the Dodgers. So, but you know, how much will the Dodgers and Padres and Phillies all have to play for? So, I mean, it'd be embarrassing for the Mets not to win it. You know, to lose out to a team that was with decimating for injuries and really gutted their team at the trade deadline, you know, trading away five of their players. Okay. So I still think the Mets make it. I think they write this thing, and they can all point out to the Alonso walk-off. Might be the most important home run since the home run against the Brewers last year in the division series.
And you know what surprised me? I don't know that I would have guessed this correctly, but Juan Soto has 40 home runs.
Yeah, it's funny. It's just a, you know, I mean, 40 home runs are 40 home runs, but, you know, they just haven't seen that impactful. You know, some of the home runs are, you know, in blowouts one way or the other, a few stolen bases that way. Where I think he's had a good season, but I don't think any fan or Met fan would even say,
yeah, no.
Oh, great season. It seems underachieving, even though those numbers are big numbers.
All right. What's your take on a Yankee Red Sox? It seems like, you know, the Yankees, they're not winning that division. Toronto's going to win the division. And enough of this whole nonsense about how the Yankees are going to catch Toronto. They're not catching Toronto, okay? It's over.
No, I agree.
It's all done. Wishful thinking. It's going to be the Yankees and the Red Sox in the postseason. Who do you give the edge to?
I give to the Yankees, particularly. I think it's going to be big. I don't think home field's necessarily that big in a lot of places. But I think in the Yankee-Red Sox series it is. So I'll give the advantage to the Yankees. I think the Red Sox are a different team without Roman Anthony. I think that loss is just so big right now. So I'll give the edge to the Yankees. I think it was big, too, the fact that the Yankees played so well against them the last series.
Bob, assuming the Mets do make it to October, who do you think that starting pitching, maybe the four-man rotation, should be? Or if the wild card series, who are a couple guys that the Mets should have the ball in games one and two?
Well, I got to go McClain, you know, either one or two. Maybe number one there. They got to be praying that Senga can bounce back and be that guy. You know, you probably do you use Sproat too in that thing? I don't know. You may use two of those starters. You know, the one thing that benefits the Mets, though, is that this year, kind of a quirk in the schedule, so the National League Division Series, you have a day off after game one and a day off after game two. So all you need is three starters in that series. So I think it's a big advantage the Mets get in that you don't have to use that four starter.
Did you like how the Mets took care of business last night with tag team pitching? They start Holmes, who's really only been good for, you know, four or five innings this year, and then he runs out of gas. And then you bring in Shamania, who's really struggled as a starter this year. You bring him in, and he did a great job for five innings. You got a little tag team last night, and you win the game 8-3.
Yeah, that was a great win by them, especially not having to use anybody else in that bullpen. So, you know, you can save Diaz. So that's going to be a huge thing, just, you know, going forward, particularly, you know, today. Now you got a fresh bullpen thanks to those two guys. So yeah, I'm not sure you would start Holmes in the playoffs either. You know, certainly not Manaea. So, but yeah, maybe do that instead of a real bullpen game. You do a tag team for one game. But like I said, you should not have to do that for the division series, only for the LCS if they get that far.
Bob, who's your AL MVP, Cal Raleigh or Aaron Judge?
You know, just thinking about that yesterday, this morning, after what Raleigh has done, I still think it's Judge.
Okay.
But say Raleigh breaks Judge's record. Say he ends up with 63 home runs or, you know, at least 62. I think that may change it. I do believe this, if Cal Raleigh was playing right field for the Yankees and Judge was catcher for the Seattle Mariners, I think Raleigh would win the MVP. I thought it was going to be very close, a month ago. Then I thought it was all Judge's. But if Raleigh keeps doing this, you know, I think it's going to be a big thing here in the last 10 days, what Raleigh does. If Raleigh keeps having big games and the Mariners win the West, then I think it's going to be a lot closer vote. But I still think Judge, just those numbers are so much better with the batting average, you know, OPS, slugging, all that.
It's got to be Raleigh. I mean, it has to be.
I don't think it will be. I really don't.
It's a history-making season, isn't it?
Magical number. You know, 60, if he gets 63, then I think it's his. 62 might be his. Yeah.
I mean, he had an historic night last night, didn't he?
He did. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're talking about having more home runs than Mickey Mantle, and, you know, tying Griffey for the most home runs in franchise history, and being a catcher. You just wish the, if Judge just had a normal season or so, but just the those numbers, particularly the batting average and all that. And, you know, when you're talking about, you know, I'm big on most valuable player, not best player. Without Judge, you know, do the Yankees even make the playoffs? I know you can say the same thing about Raleigh as well, but I just think that there was such a drop off once when Judge was out of the lineup, and he is playing the field now, not DHing. So I still think still think it's Judge's right now.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bob. One more for me, quick. Our local product, Jeff Hoffman from Shaker High School, 31 saves, tied for fourth in the majors. Safe to say, like you said, right, Toronto's going to win the AL East and going to be hosting a divisional series. How impactful do you think our local product, Jeff Hoffman, has been in their good season now in first place still in the AL East?
Well, they certainly need him to be that guy in the playoffs. He's kind of had a, you know, up and down season.
Yeah.
A lot of closers have, except for just, you know, a couple, like, you know, Diaz and, you know, that sort of thing. And, of course, Chapman for the Red Sox. But no, and they're counting on him. I think the Blue Jays have as good a chance as anybody to get to the World Series. You know, maybe even win it. But they need Bichette back at shortstop. But no, it's a fun team, and Canada's going crazy rooting for the Blue Jays. It's fun to see that environment back in Toronto.
Fair enough, Bob. We're in the home stretch. I cannot wait to get to the playoffs. I'm kind of done with
the
regular season.
Like,
you know, I'm ready
baseball.
To go. Let's go.
Let's do it.
Right? Yankees, Red Sox. We know that's going to be.
It could be.
The
hang
matchup.
On, though. Right now, it's Yankees, Astros. So you got to watch out. Those standings are getting tight. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. And I think it'll be a classic matchup. Mets, Dodgers.
That'd be great.
I think the Diamondbacks, Dodgers, people will turn it off. But Mets, Dodgers would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Bob, keep up the great work. We enjoy reading what you write all the time in MLB, and always a pleasure getting you on Big Board Sports.
Thanks, Bob.
My pleasure. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks,
Bob.
Roger. All right, Bob Nightingale with us here on Big Board Sports. Broadview Federal Credit Union are everywhere. They're on all over our TV show as well with Coach Ambrose, UAlbany Football Weekly. We'll record that tonight, Wednesday, busy day for the coach. He joins us here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Good morning, Coach Ambrose. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm well.
That's good. I'm glad.
Coach. Yeah.
A good catching up with you a little bit yesterday before practice. What I asked some of your guys this, I know it's not where you want to be at 0-3 and a tough one against New Haven. What is the climate and the mood of your team right now, would you say, Coach?
Yeah, you know, climate, mood. They seem to be really, really energetic at practice yesterday. They feel like they've missed too many opportunities, so they want to take advantage of each one we get. So I think they're optimistic about our chances. There's a lot of football left in the season.
Because it wasn't all that long ago, Jared, we said what a great performance your guys had against Iowa. And maybe they started to feel that it was maybe a really good performance, that they didn't have to show up for a couple of other games. And maybe you got caught up a little bit on that. How did you handle the New Haven loss with your team after the game?
You know, you try to reestablish your standards and practices within the program that may have slipped a little bit in your locker room, and remind them who we're, you know, building to be. And, you know, the accountability level's got to rise. You know, you got to hold your players to a higher standard, because the standard that they've been, you know, performing at wasn't good enough. So, you know, it's piece by piece every day. And, you know, I got a good coaching staff trying to help me along in that.
Do you make changes, or do you keep things the same, just do it better?
You make a couple changes. You know, we've changed a couple things in how we practice and added some more daily competition into it, instead of just, you know, focusing on, you know, preparation for your opponent. You know, in-house competition's good. And, you know, but I think a lot of times, you know, bad leaders become reactionary to things. And, you know, you got to believe in what you're doing. You know, there's always time for change when, you know, sometimes it comes from outside in. But, you know, right now we're going to focus and look inward and try and build on the things that we know we've gotten good at.
Coach, you mentioned the energy yesterday at practice. What are a few things, kind of piggybacking off your last point here, what are a few things you want to really see your group improve on here after the tough one against New Haven, getting ready for Cornell Saturday night back at home?
You know, I'd say the biggest thing we got to improve on is we got to stop spending so much time quantifying or trying to figure out how good our opponent is or is not. You know, in my mind, we've overlooked our last two opponents, and I knew it going out of Iowa, the rat poison that comes about when people say how well you perform.
Yep.
You start to, you know, believe into that. And, you know, I think we have to be more focused on our performance, our techniques, our effort, our energy, and not so much on, you know, the level of competition that we might be facing.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Yeah. When you look at your, and you brought this up yesterday, it's a good point. You get down 24-0, and then everything you do from there on out, you're kind of just pressing, right? And that makes it very difficult. And you almost got all the way back. You got it to 24-17. But when you get down by that margin, your team's pressing, right? And you felt that.
Yeah, your team's pressing, and all your preparation pretty much goes out the window, because the situation of the game is not, you know, the same. And, you know, the things that you felt really good about being able to execute in your game plans and with your preparation, you know, get tossed, because they're making changes too when they're playing up. So, you know, it's a slippery slope. You never want to get in those situations. You want to keep every game within 1 to 2 scores, or get ahead 4 scores. And that makes stuff different too, but I'd rather be on that end for once.
Yeah. Well, no doubt about that. And maybe that'll be this week against Cornell. Who knows? And you also have to throw the ball a lot more when you're down and you're trying to make some big plays through the air. Jack got picked off a couple of times. How do you feel about the offense right now, and maybe a little bit more on the ground game?
I feel like, you know, offensively we have a great chance to be a potent group. You know, you've seen big plays all over the place with multiple different people. You know, and the run game really, you know, that got thwarted just by the situation and score of the game last week. I felt like Griffin was running the ball pretty well. He busted a couple decent runs. But, you know, we wanted to kind of stick to that more this week, and it got away from us. So it's going to be something that's ever evolving, our run game.
Are you healthy there? I know Reg got dinged up a little bit. Is he going to be able to go on Saturday?
Yeah, he'll be ready to go.
Okay, so you have JoJo, Reg, and Woodell in your backfield. And then defensively, I mean, look, I don't know what was going on in the first half, but you certainly, whatever adjustments you made, Coach Nesselt made at halftime, you shut down New Haven in the second half.
Absolutely. You know, Bill does a great job, and we made adjustments. And if that's the defense that, you know, we take week in, week out, that second half defense, we're going to be deadly on that side of the ball. And, you know, that's got to be our expectation, though. You know, it can't be something that just comes about. You know, that's got to be the expectation, how we play every snap.
What have you seen from Cornell? The problem with Cornell is they haven't played a game yet. I do think they have a lot of players back from last year. So did you have to go back and look at what they did last year to kind of prepare you for Saturday?
Yeah, you do. And, you know, they return both coordinators. You know, head coach is a really sharp offensive mind. He's got 10 of his guys back on offense. You know, the only guy they lost was their quarterback, who was a very veteran guy. And then defensively, they return about, you know, six, seven guys. So, you know, whenever you go into these first Ivy League games, you're trying to prepare for what they did last year. But, you know, they're coaches too. They go out and study the game, and they're, you know, might make some changes in what they do. And, you know, you just got to be able to, you know, be prepared for the unplanned, you know, and make sure that we're sticking to our foundations of teaching within our schemes.
Well, it goes without saying, right? Big game, just because you need a, I would think, need a win, need some confidence with this team before you dive into that CAA schedule.
Yeah, and, you know, the way I'm wired, every game's a big game. And that's the message I've been trying to, you know, pound into these guys here is it doesn't matter if you're playing a D3 school or Iowa. Like, you prepare the same every week, and we've fallen short of that, and I'm doing my damnedest to make sure we don't do it again.
Yeah. All right, Coach, listen, keep up the good work. I'll see you in studio at WNYT later on tonight for the Coach's Show TV side, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Jared.
Thanks, Coach.
Jared Ambrose, yeah, what are you going to do? I mean, it is what it is. On to
the
next
one. He's got the right attitude.
Yeah. But this is a big one. I mean, you call must win what you could. I mean,
it's hard, you just
don't want to go to New Hampshire at 0-4.
Yeah, it's one you want to get. You want to get. I mean, Cornell, it's hard evaluating when there's no film on them this year.
I don't know. What was that score down there last year?
Oh, boy.
What was the Cornell?
I know that
UAlbany won the game.
They were down at halftime.
But I think it was close and might have been down at halftime and came from behind to win a close game at Cornell. Did UAlbany?
31-10.
Okay.
But at halftime, it was 7-6 Cornell.
Yeah. It was the second half.
Yeah,
UAlbany rolled a little
bit. October 5th last year. Yep.
Does it help Cornell that they have not played a game and they've been able to practice and look at a lot of film from UAlbany and they've got a pretty good game plan here against the Great Danes?
I think it can help or hurt. I think it goes both ways. You know, two sides to every coin, Raj, right? I mean, one, that's an advantage for teams scouting you and filming you because you can come out there with a ton of tricks up your sleeve and throw UAlbany for a loop. But also, two, are you feeling like you're late into the season and you've FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. You haven't been playing. You know, that's just how the Ivy League rolls. They do their own thing. I get that. But I think it really, honestly, is going to help them more than hurt them, Raj. We'll see Saturday night for the whiteout game at Casey Stadium.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to Big Board Sports on this Wednesday, Hour 3, getting ready for Week 3 in the NFL season. We have some breaking news around the Jets, and not surprising that their starting quarterback, Justin Fields, is not out of concussion protocol yet, so he will not play on Sunday at Tampa. Tyrod Taylor will get the call. Of course, the Jets coming off the loss to the Bills on Sunday, and that game wasn't even close. Nate Geary, Buffalo Bills Radio Network, and we are the station that carries Buffalo Bills here in the Capital Region, joins us to preview the Thursday night game against Miami. Nate, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, and how about you guys?
We're good, Nate.
Thanks,
Nate. We're good.
Yeah.
What did you see out of the Week 2 performance for the Bills?
Well, domination, which is good.
Yep.
You know, I think there was a lot of people thinking it could be a trap game just based on the sort of like high strung emotion that you had from that come from behind victory in Week 1 on Sunday Night Football against the Ravens. So it was good to see them. And listen, those 1 o'clock games, they're a little bit easier to prepare for, right? It's a normal schedule, you know, a normal week. So it was. I'm sure it was nice for Sean McDermott to get the team back to kind of like a standard week schedule. And of course, they go on the short week this week. But getting back to those 1 o'clock games, I think does straighten out their schedule, their preparation. You know, getting guys to return back from injury. So getting back to that 1 o'clock felt nice on the road. Short 45-minute flight. You know, through JFK and took care of business against a Jets team that looked pretty prickly in that Week 1 2-point loss to the Steelers the week before. Did not really have that same tact in Week 2, especially on offense. And it was certainly good to see the Bills defense rebound the way they did after. Listen, I think that the Bills and the Ravens are two offenses in the league right now that really pose unique threats across the league. I know the Ravens might even be a little bit of a class of their own with the running attack that they have, but the Bills and Ravens are really the two top offenses in the NFL, and what they have similar with each other is their willingness to play bigger packages. They're harder to defend, with the rest of the league really kind of leaning more towards smaller nickel defenses with two linebackers and that extra defensive back on the field, you could really dictate the terms of the game on offense when you're bringing bigger guys in but can still throw the football at the pace the Bills and Ravens do. So I think you saw that on display. It really, I think, forced the Jets into some personnel packages they weren't particularly comfortable playing. And, you know, the Bills really dominated them on the ground on Sunday, and I suspect it'll be part of their game plan against the 30th-ranked defense in the Dolphins on Thursday night.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you're right, though. I mean, the narrative going into that game last week, a lot of people were like, well, I think the Jets can keep this close. Maybe the Jets have a chance to pull up an upset. Certainly going to cover the spread, all of that. It was total domination by the Buffalo Bills. They're very good, obviously, again, this year. I don't know what to expect other than a blowout on Thursday night. Now, my mindset is this game isn't going to even be close.
Yeah, you know, and listen, I was surprised to see the narratives around the league about the Bills' defense after giving up 40 points against the Ravens, when you consider the Ravens also gave up 40 points in that game and they lost. There wasn't the same sort of panic about what the defense, who the defense was and what the identity of these teams were for Baltimore. I thought both of them had really strong bounce-back performances last week. I think defensively the Bills are probably closer to what we saw on Sunday than what we saw on Sunday night 2 weeks ago against the Ravens. But, yeah, the projections in this game are certainly ones of blowouts, right? And the Dolphins are coming off of, I think a bad loss last week at home to New England, a game that they kind of looked like they had control of towards the end of the fourth quarter. But man, oh man, was the pre-snap communication. I saw a video breakdown of that last drive where they're just going up against the play clock, having it hit zero when the ball is snapped every time. It's just the communication. It's year four of that regime. And for them not to have basic communication in place on offense with an offensive coach in crunch time, when you need to have to be on your P's and Q's, that was really eye-opening to me. I'll say this, I get after Dolphins fans. We've got a nice little rivalry on social media, and these are two teams that have played some pretty good games, but the Bills have owned the Dolphins. I've never seen Dolphins players and fans talk the way they have going into this game. It's almost like Dolphins fans are hoping for a blowout so that it's the nail in Mike McDaniel's coffin. And hearing Tua talk this week about, oh, man, Josh Allen, he can do so many things I can't. And it's just like, man, it's a very subdued, very different tone from 2 years ago when Mike McDaniel was wearing the I wish it was colder shirt. Quite a different tone this time around playing the Bills. Almost a pre-defeat, like they're setting the stage for a blowout. It's just a very weird vibe coming out of Miami.
We're talking some Buffalo Bills footballs. We're the Capital Region's home for Buffalo Bills football. I'm 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio here with Nate Geary, WGR 550 in Buffalo, Bills pregame halftime postgame show. Joins us for a few on Big Board Sports here. Nate, look, the injury report, the latest, Ed Oliver and Matt Milano out tomorrow night in the Bills game. Spreads currently Buffalo minus 11.5. How much does that maybe affect Bills fans, Dolphins fans heading into this game, though, and two of arguably the Bills' best defensive players, Nate, are out tomorrow night?
Yeah, and I think in both, last week I thought Deion Walker and Bills' rookie second-round pick, TJ Sanders, played really well in Ed Oliver's absence last week. I mean, they really dominated the Jets' offensive line that I thought really did a great job against there's a lot of names on that Pittsburgh front. They're a little bit old, but they really handled Pittsburgh, I thought, up front in their front four, and quite the opposite last week against the Bills. I thought the Bills dominated the line of scrimmage going into this week. Ed Oliver's their best defensive lineman. They'd love to have him. But their schedule over the next couple of weeks, I think they can let Ed Oliver get healthy and get back in the lineup without rushing him back in. And as for Matt Milano, this is a team that is, pretty used to playing without Matt Milano over the last 3 years, a torn pectoral last year, a really weird leg injury 2 years ago in London. So he's missed a lot of games over the last couple of seasons. And Dorian Williams, the Bills' former third-round pick out of Tulane, is a guy they like a lot, is one of the more athletic linebackers in the league. I think he ran something in the 4.5s with his 40-yard dash. And that's a player that, that's been in this system. They've spent a lot of time developing, and who's going to be prepared and has played a lot of football in the league, not just on special teams, but in place of Matt Milano. And they haven't really missed a beat. So I think they feel very confident. If it is a long-term injury, they're sort of dancing around whether or not it is or it isn't. Maybe they don't know, maybe they know, but they're kind of slow playing it. So we'll see if he ends up on IR with a designation to return. But I think the Bills are in a good position, both at defensive tackle with the depth they've used in the draft this year. Zion Logue is a name, got elevated off the practice squad last week. Another guy they picked up kind of midway through last season, spent some time on their practice squad, looked really good last week, kind of a bigger player. They don't have a ton of guys that are sort of space eaters, true one techniques. I would expect he gets the practice squad call up again this week. And another important note, the Bills have two defensive linemen that are suspended for the first 6 weeks of the season. Michael Hoyt, their free agent addition from the Rams last year, who, I'll tell you, probably had one of the more eye-opening preseasons of anybody on the defensive side of the ball. Bills are really excited to get him back, especially the way Joey Bosa is playing. The idea of pairing those two guys as pass rushers, I think, is a really exciting thing. And then Larry Ogunjobi, their interior defensive tackle, guy that, you know, has played a few years in the league, most recently with Pittsburgh. So the Bills do have, I think, unique reinforcements coming. It's almost like two free trade deadline acquisitions on the defensive side of the ball. So, you know, even if they start to, you know, lose some bodies to injuries, especially along that front seven, you know, they've got reinforcements in the barrel, which I think is a really good thing for the Bills.
See what happens tomorrow night. We begin week three, the Bills and the Dolphins. You can hear the game right here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. And Nate Geer will be part of the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Nate, thank you so much for joining us here for a few minutes, and we'll talk to you soon.
Pleasure as always, guys.
Thank you. Thanks, Nate. Nate Geary, Bills should roll tomorrow night.